This recording of the Panama City Linux User Group meeting number 58 was made on June 19, 2008 while on vacation. The slide presentation to accompany the audio can be found at pclove.info and by following the link in the show notes.
All right, you want to start going through the links?
Sure.
this one I put in, some of this is old from at least 2 weeks ago, but this was a little shot of the second version of the OLPC. This is a slow machine we're running on here. But it was supposed to have like a touchscreen on both sides. And they say we're talking about it, I guess, multi-touch. And so like the keyboard, you know, it's like they could do international keyboard a lot easier because it's not even a hardware keyboard.
Wow.
They just put the image of it up there.
And one on.
Yeah. I know. I don't even understand how they do that stuff. So
yeah.
If you look at the specs on the old one, I mean, maybe it was slow and a little hard to use, but God, it was crazy what they got out of that little bit of power. Anyway. So, let's just put that down. This is that game, and you've already seen that, but the Penny Arcade game. And they have it for Linux, Mac,
PC, Windows, and on Xbox Live.
Okay.
Arcade.
Oh.
Penny Arcade?
Yeah, Penny Arcade's a couple guys, if you're not familiar with them, they're a couple guys who basically write comics and do web commentary on video game industry. Pretty funny, they have a very big following. They did something that most people who are critics of the industry won't do. They actually made a game with a company about their characters and stuff like that. And, you know, that's got mixed reviews, but they released it through there. They had kind of a homebrew game site called Greenhouse that they're starting up, and this was the first game released on Greenhouse, and they released it for every platform. So I thought it was very cool that, they definitely put it on Xbox Arcade and PC, Mac, Linux. It looks pretty good. I played the demo. It looks pretty good. I just don't have the time for games anymore. So
yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Then take Windows Vista and 8 gigs of RAM to,
You know, I didn't try Windows Vista. I don't know what the hardware requirements were for that.
Change this thing really fast. Something else. Go back and start my page up.
Is that a tab that was so small? Watched on?
I don't know. Yeah. The phone has gotten bigger and the head stayed the same.
Great, man. I was learning about BIOS peep code.
Oh, you're going to do the one on the microwave?
Yeah.
What's the microwave doing? No video card?
No keyboard attached.
That's funny, man. You're the beacon.
Two keyboards.
There's a jillion of them.
Yeah.
This one is, I didn't really know this. It seems like I heard it, but I never messed with it. But Bash has a VI command editing mode for people who like VI.
Really?
Yeah, so like you do this set minus O, VI, and you can go in command and insert mode. And I try to do this all the time by accident.
Long back? On the command line?
Yeah. I mean, don't you find yourself doing
that? Yeah, I do. Like I'm always hitting L or something.
Uh-huh. Like, wait, no. So it actually has that, but I just never used it. Anyway, figure at least people. And you can like yank arguments and put them in another place and all that kind of stuff. Change words. So all the stuff that you try to do on accident actually does work. Just run that one. This one, I think I saw this one today. They were talking about how AMD is doing the shared source, or a lot of the source they reuse on their Linux, their Windows, their Solaris, and all the driver base is they're trying to make it as much common code as possible. So they're getting support out for the cards as quickly as they can. That's just an article on that. I thought that was kind of cool.
Is that the official Ruby?
I don't know, so it's pretty hot.
You got an API.
I don't think Python can hold, you know.
Oh, no. It's not Ruby the language, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's got an API.
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 Oh, okay.
API caller on, or whatever that thing is.
They'd be pretty smart if they used the logo.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if you could say Python and have it go like that. That wouldn't match very well, I don't think.
Maybe Boa.
Yeah, something like that. This one, everybody mentioned it last week, but I didn't have a set of slides. So what do we do here again? You can do like a S for a search.
You can do like V for video, I think. Video space.
Whoops. I did actually. Wireless keyboard. Okay.
Wow. Computer graphics.
Wow. Okay. S space. Do that little star. E C. No, we're not the first. Oh yeah, that's right. PCLog.org. Because I tried to do that with some kindergarten readiness thing. Because I wanted to work. Anyway. Just a little Google Shell thing, and that there's all kind of stuff you can do, right?
Yeah, type build, you know, you can do all kind of crap. That's cool. Fun for it.
Yeah.
Search what you can do. Really.
Kind of interesting. Alright, so. This one is you.
I don't know.
I think it is.
So good.
No, I don't think that was me.
You didn't send that to you?
That's the AMD thing, isn't it?
Huh.
AMD makes Evolutionary Leap. That was one of your previous links.
If I did send that to you, I don't remember.
I might have pasted the wrong link with the wrong thing. Let me see what it says. Software vendor list testing benchmark. I thought you sent me something about testing. And benchmarking.
I'm blanking.
Yeah, because it was with this same email. I think I might have pasted the wrong.
I think that's the right page. I saw that link in Google Reader today. I mean,
okay.
And I think it was to that web page, but they had the wrong story there.
Okay. I know this one was the notebook remix.
Yeah.
The thing you sent me last time.
Yeah.
Why is this not when I'm doing a new tab? Why is it not going to?
Did you get an S11 or something?
Full
screen?
Yeah, we're in full screen. Well, when I did a new tab, it wasn't
going. So it's not going to.
It's going in the background?
Yeah, I guess I need to.
You hold down shift.
Okay.
Shift and click.
All right, so this one's you. You want to, let me do the thing while you're talking.
Oh, okay. This was just kind of interesting, little article I looked at with the notebook remix. It was kind of vaguely mentioned in an interview a while back with Mark Shuttleworth, and basically it's supposed to be an OEM kind of stripped down version of Ubuntu for like maybe atom-based small portable smaller than the sub-notebook thing. I can't think of the right term.
Like the Asus machine?
Yeah, I kind of like that. It's a small, you know, on-off web surf kind of machine or whatever. So it looked pretty cool. The idea was kind of neat, and I guess there were certain things about it that I thought would be really fun to play with, and I had mentioned to Dwayne that reading through this thing with the questions and answers, it had a lot of good things to say. The one disappointing thing about it was that they seemed to make it sort of clear that they intended to be OEM only, so they weren't going to just have like, you know, just go to Ubuntu and see the ISO for installing this on a device or something like that. It was more supposed to be when you buy a device, it's on there. And they're a good place to do that. I can understand why that's their angle, because right now those devices they're not prevalent out there. So instead of it being you buy one with Windows whatever on it and you put Ubuntu on it, now it's equally viable to just buy one with Ubuntu one to begin with. And that's the angle they're trying to push, because they're trying to change that mental approach of, instead of Linux being a displacement OS, it being an actual OEM. Type thing, which they've shown through, you know, their deals with Dell, selling Dell with Ubuntu or pre-installed, that kind of thing. So It looks cool, looks like it'd be pretty neat to play with, but it doesn't look like it's going to be something that's easily, just go download it and boot it up on a virtual machine or something like that. It kind of reads like you can do it, but you kind of got to know what you're doing. They're not going to support it. They're not going to, you know, that kind of thing. So, if you're interested in that sort of thing, you should read that. It's a pretty good question to answer.
Cool.
This one is mine.
Yeah. Intrusion detection, open source. There's a couple of accessible good choices for intrusion detection on your system if you're interested in doing that kind of thing. That's really what it talks about.
I'm interested.
So, actually, yeah. I know we were talking about it in the lab a couple weeks ago, and I came across that article about the same time that was being talked about, so I decided to send it out.
This one is YouTube.
Yeah, this was a little bit more some explanation about maybe some recommendations about partitioning your system if you're installing from scratch. Maybe give you some insight into what like a VAR and those different kind of mount points or what's underneath them. So depending on what kind of system you're installing for, some recommendation on some sizes and things like that.
I like that.
I know there's several different articles we've talked about in the past about it, but this one's just another one.
I like, look at how he makes a partition just MP3.
Yeah.
So, I don't take the time to explain that one.
And why you're, and you know, like if you're running a web server, you know, what partitions you need to separate out, things like that. I thought that'd be useful.
Was this you, Chris? Did you get the same thing? Yeah, this was you. The one that wasn't x86 that would run the Quake 3 full. like all the alias and all the stuff. I'm talking about?
I think so.
When you see it, maybe we'll. ARM 11 CPU.
Oh, yeah, that was for small devices. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yep,
it plays HD content. I mean, it's a CPU and graphics all bundled together.
HDMI output. Yeah, like Quake 3 at handheld resolution, full animation.
Yeah.
And that's the topic filtering, 40 frames per second. Wow.
And it's for like a smartphone or a handheld kind of device.
That's crazy.
1080p decoding, 720p encoding, I think.
Android, Google phone, you play Quake 3.
That chip right there?
Exactly. That's the price. An ARM processor and their graphics.
They say it showered you sort of.
It did, I think.
I'm guessing this chip comes in like embedded devices.
Scroll up.
Like FPGA. 2.1 MIPS.
Maybe. That's the top of the UI.
So it has an integrated ARM 11 core processor.
Yeah.
So what is it?
See, which is a low power, small die size.
I was thinking they had two.
I think that's what's in these N18s. I know it's an ARM processor. I don't know if it's an ARM 11 or not.
Okay.
Oh, 2 watts. There it is.
100 milliwatts.
25 hours of video playback.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And 30 hours of audio playback.
1080 at 24 frames per second.
Have you guys used this feature on the Mid Firefox, the full phase yet? See if they have that. You know how Opera always has everything for or most everything. Mm-hmm. They do it now. It does images, zooms images too. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Control like plus. Control plus. Control minus.
Is it keypad plus?
That's control.
Yeah, keypad plus.
Keypad plus.
Is that the control shift and the whole thing? Of course, the dinner just kind of get a little crappy as it goes up too big, but, that's a full face, which I thought was kind of cool. I always thought it was a good feature. I'm keeping my phone back down. This is a really slow.
Control thing. Zero will reset.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I like that one I used on.
There's a, I thought about you today, I saw it on the add-ons, there's a, what do you call it, speed dial add-on for Firefox.
Oh yeah.
Are you serious?
Firefox 3.
I'm switching. I downloaded it, but I haven't switched yet.
And then Firebug works at the beta version of Firebug.
What does that mean, speed dial?
Speed dial has this thing where basically your home page was a list of sort of your favorite apps.
Right.
That's an awkward feature, right?
Oh, yeah.
I saw that too, yeah.
Kind of.
Okay. Well, it's like when you open a new tab without, like if you just open a blank new tab, it would have like 9 options that of pre-programmed that you had chosen, and then you did like number 3, and it would go to a web page that you already had programmed.
And it's an image, a preview of whatever's on that site.
That used to only be an offer. Now he's saying it's in the new Firefox.
There's an add-on.
It'll definitely do that.
Did you send me this one, Chris, or did
Alan?
Yes.
I think I read that one too. It might have been me as well.
So somebody knows.
Yeah. Basically, Acer's looking at shipping with some version of Linux.
I don't think they specified,
but basically, Acer's looking at making some laptops that ship with Linux pre-installed as well. So, okay. So now you're looking at not only the Dells and a few other kind of niche machines, but there's a lot of Acers out there that you can buy, like Walmart and stuff like that, that make potentially in the near future.
That's more the better.
I sent this last month.
Really? Upper right corner? How much they paying you out of this, man?
There we go.
I'm going to retire. Well, I think this one speaks for itself. That they were talking about how long the OS has been up without rebooting. And that it defaults to safe mode whenever there's a problem. And they're real happy with being able to default to safe mode. It also said a lot about the guys who write code for them. And that... they do, like you see in the bottom paragraph, 20 to 30 sequences, 50 lines of code. But I'm curious how much of it's new stuff. You know, it's like probably some of it's move this arm this way and point the antenna that away. But the other neat thing about it was, to me, was how long the OS was up without any failures, which reminded me of the story that Jake told, and this is this networking guy in our group, and he was talking about Cisco equipment, which is Unix based, right? Cisco stuff, and I thought it might be a neat Guinness World Book of Records category, you know, like the Firefox thing we're just talking about was, you know, they didn't want to reboot a Cisco box because it had been up for 4 years. And so they didn't want to do any maintenance. You know, the new patches came to, no, we don't want it. Because they thought it was neat how long it was up, you know. So I thought, well, I wonder if there is a Guinness World Book of Records.
There's a story that I've heard several times about some Unix machine running at some school, and it had some process that had been hung or something, was sitting there going, and it was like from years and years and years and years, it was like, I don't know what year, but like a lot longer than 4 years.
Wow.
Like the 80s or
70s. Something like that.
So some student's like, let's reboot it and fix it, and the old professor walks out, no, don't touch it.
I just heard the story, I don't know anything more about it.
I guess they don't have any power.
I bet you can Google that. Your biggest uptime? I bet you'll find all kinds of stuff.
Let's do it. Why not? right, just because I can't see where to go. Oh, man.
Does the Firefox that came with Hardy, is that beta?
That was a beta, yeah. It was Firefox 3 beta 5. And during I'm curious about this too, because during the download party, I got a system update notification and I updated Firefox 3.
Almost 12 years.
Yeah, see.
Wow.
There you go.
12 years?
That's what I'm talking about. Or what kind of UPS he's got on that thing? That's the power clips.
That looks a little suspicious, doesn't it?
I've read this page before. Right. I think at the bottom it says something about
37,000.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
Did you see the Jeopardy thing, the Jeopardy tournament with the college kid? And at the end, the guy risked 1337. That was funny. And he read it out, he's like, 1337.
Yeah, I was curious about the Firefox thing, because during the download, record-setting time for Firefox 3,
you wonder.
I got the update, and did the update, and installed Firefox 3, and I wonder if that counts. You know what I'm saying? Because it was coming through the Ubuntu repository, so I don't know.
I bet it did.
They had
instructions or a note there that said only manual downloads from the side or something.
Yeah. Well, I downloaded it too just to count it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I did. I went and downloaded it afterwards just to make sure it counted.
Hey, you got before we go on, all those little Debbie's need to be gone out of here. So, if you don't eat them now, stick them in your pocket. Like the kids, whatever. So, okay,
oh, that's cool.
We got them gone.
Put a cup on your desk.
There you go.
Every day.
I'm getting rid of you.
Right there when you walk in the morning, you sneak a couple of his gym bags.
What the? Yeah, exactly. That's not what I mean there. Okay, so I guess that was the last link. No podcast links. I just wanted to mention, one of the podcasts I was listening to, I think it might have been Twit or Security Now or something. One of the guys on there was talking about how the EFF kind of saved him when he had somebody coming basically to the FBI was coming to sequester records from his website. And basically, as soon as he got the letter, he said that the letter told him that he couldn't inform anybody at his company about it, couldn't talk to his lawyers about it. It was against the law for him to talk to anybody like that about it. So somehow...
How is that true?
I don't know. He said it sounded ridiculous to him, and there was no... So I think... I don't know. However, he got in touch with these people, and they said... They were like, well, we don't want to know anything about it because then it puts them under the same thing as him. And so anyway, he had a story about it. But anyway, it sounded very interesting and that the EFF kind of saved him on that because it would have taken him out pretty good if it wouldn't have been for them. So I figured I would mention it. And if you go to their website, they talk about all the cases they've done and all, and it's everything like peer-to-peer, file sharing, and requests for information from web admins and ISPs.
They have a podcast now, too.
Oh, they do? The EFF? Okay. So there you go. You might listen to that, too. And there's the link to the website. So, a donation or a t-shirt or whatever. But you might look at their website and see. I thought about getting at least a t-shirt.
Are the t-shirts cool looking?
I don't know. I
does it matter?
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, there's some more bowls over there, Chris, if you want to put some of those chips in the bowl.
Yeah, I was just going to dump it in.
You can dump them on. That's fine. We can dump them on.
Mix the fire habanero with the other ones.
I don't want to do it.
You guys scared? I'm scared. That's all right.
Really?
I'll put them on the bottom.
You ever had those?
I have. And they're hot as can be.
Yeah, they're about to come.
Go ahead. Not
they're really hot.
Do it. It'll make it a good game. Sometimes they're unbearably hot. Depends on the fact.
I think in the middle of this discussion, we ought to say Dave should come more often because this is like very lively love.
Yeah, I read an article about somebody getting with the government, or they were trying to sue somebody doing file sharing, which in the EFL, helping them defend themselves.
I think they're using a good word, man. About what the, I looked at it, the website.
Let's see the t-shirt.
Okay. Let's
yeah, it's cool looking.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and order what's he can.
We're going to institute the Gilmore t-shirt rating system.
Yeah,
we're
doing
that.
Hot cases. It's fine. There's lots of information here.
See, right there, we need to tell them they need to put their t-shirt
donate.
Sale right
over the top there.
Oh, there's a logo.
Yeah, like I said, the logo's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
There you go.
There it is. Ooh, wow.
Okay, that's a good shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
enough.
I like the middle big ones.
And I like the hat.
I like the hat. They're only
$1,000. Oh, man.
Defender.
You're a student, right?
Well, $65 looks like
6 months.
Your lowest.
6 months subscription.
Is that U.S.? Organization? Is that contaminated by the euro?
I don't know.
Right.
The exchange rate, that's why it costs $100.
Just think the donation would be more if it was something other than American dollars.
Yeah, thank goodness it's American dollars. Right, that's $1,000.
Look at it as
a 20.
Yeah. You get it here. To get a t-shirt and a hat, you have to do 500.
No, 100. T-shirt, hat, or anonymous.
No, it says t-shirt, hat, or t-shirt and hat combo is 500.
What is anonymous?
Anonymous serving software package up there.
Cannot get over.
I guess maybe they just give you Tor. Yeah, Tor. Yeah, out of thing.
Well, the Tor. Well, if you ask them, I'm asking you $500 earlier than.
Yeah, I'll donate right now.
That's like Jason Whitaker's thing with the CETO.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money, and then later on he's like, well, that's about less than $600. You can pull me back one time.
That hat's nice, because everybody would be like, yeah. What does that mean?
It's X.
It's you.
It's X.
There you go. All right. So this is kind of a obvious thing for probably people who program and anybody making who's even done Bash, but I figured I'd mention it because I used it the other day. But basically just a way to have kind of an error handling thing with in a Bash script using the OR. So like for an OR, you evaluate your condition. You know, if this is true or that is true, then it's true. This is true or that is false. You know, one of them is true, so you got a true or false or true. It's true. False or false is false. So looking at this thing, if as an efficiency in most programming language in Bash, if the first thing it comes to is true, it won't even evaluate the second thing because all that has to be true is one of them. So it won't even evaluate the second thing. Well, you can use that to your advantage. So in Bash, if I do something like this, like this is my command I want to execute. It's just an LS of it, and that file's not there, so it'll actually evaluate the false. You know, your conditions can be a statement, like a command. So I run wget or grep or something, and it returns back this value, which will evaluate a true or false. So I can actually make the left-hand side conditions be a command, and the right-hand side condition be a command. So if this command that I put on this side returns back a success, then it won't even run the right hand. And you see, it only one thing has to be true. But if it's false, it'll check the other side to see if it's true. So you'd use that as to your advantage by saying, I'm gonna put this command here, and I'm gonna say or, and then I'm gonna put my failure command here. So if this thing returns true and succeeds, this never gets executed. But if it fails, this gets executed. And so I wanted a cheap way, basically on one of my things I have, it's the little box that sits on the projector. And so I wanted to run mPlayer and have it go to a URL or a file and start playing it. Well, I wanted to have a really easy way to say, well, if MPlayer failed to play this thing, I'm going to pop up some error. And because there's no keyboard or anything attached to it, I'm using this XOSD on-screen display stuff. You know how when you do the volume and it puts little bars up there overlaid onto your screen, that's how they do it with that on-screen display library. So I wanted to be able to run this command, which in my case it was MPlayer, or echo something and pipe it to this OSD cat, which puts it on the screen. So basically, you know, run the LS. If it fails, this will come out. If it succeeds, then nothing comes out. And now the reason why I put this two greater than dev null, it's redirecting standard error to dev null so that if the command fails, I don't get any output on the command line. All I get is this thing popped up to OSD cat. And I don't think I have that installed on this machine, but we can install it real quick and see.
Do I remember I told you I went to recently to that Geek stream?
Yeah.
Well, I thought, I'm pretty sure that it probably is, the language is, there's a little different. It's Solaris 8, it's pretty much what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
But that tool, dev null, uh-huh, does the same thing with Solaris.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a common Unix thing.
So it's not really that far off then.
Some things aren't. That'll be definitely the same.
That just pretty much
kind of
got me to realize that they both have some type of correlation with one another.
Yeah. This XOSD bin package is where you get that OSD cat. I'll install everything. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it should. So like if I do, and I can't be root to do it because root doesn't own the display. If I do something like my name, it's going to be super tiny, but I don't want to go through the whole thing of changing the font. But you'll get a point. So if I get OSD cat, do my position, middle, and alignment, center. And see tiny in the middle, how it has that up there, man, it's super tiny. If you change the font, it looks fine, and you can make it blown up big. But so I go back here and I do like ls/etc/host. And I say to do greater than dev. No, actually, we'll leave that off for now. I say or. So now ls/etc/host is going to succeed. It's going to return. Actually, we can show that too. I'm probably skipping too much stuff here. So I do ls/etc/host. It sends me back the thing, and now if I do echo $?, that is the return value from the last command, and you'll see it's a zero, which means it succeeded. If I do ls/etc/Dwayne, it gives me, it pukes me back some error junk, and if I do echo $@, you see it gives me a non-zero number, which means it failed. So now if I do something like where it gave me error message before, it gave it to me on standard error instead of standard output. It just so happens because we're at the terminal, they're both the same. So if I do this, I'll say send everything that you would normally send to standard error, just to dev null. It just comes back with nothing. So now if I go ahead and stress that on out and do an or with OSD cat echo error, type that to OSD cat minus P center. So now when I run it, it's going to fail. It won't give me any output on the command line, but it'll pop up error on the middle of the screen there. And by default, it stays up for 5 seconds. You can change that. And now if I do one that succeeds, host, it just gives me back the thing in the evaluation on the right hand side. So it's just an easy way to get like really cheap error handling. I mean, it's just annoying. You have super fast through. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's still something that's kind of handy, I thought.
Okay,
this was for you, Tom.
Oh, well, we talked about DVD Rip before, and I went to this page, which is on the link, and they come out with some little how-tos, but what I really learned was you have to, sometimes if the thing is grayed out, and that's why I said I did a brilliant Google search, DVD Rip transcode button grayed out. And then I got this answer, and it said,
it's inductive reasoning.
Right, it worked. Yeah, it worked. And so then I learned that you have to sometimes either press cancel, and the other thing I tried was restarting DVD, because you save the project, then you restart DVD RIP, and then the transcode button is not grayed out. And the reason it was important to me, if you look back in our lug slides, you'd see how I did a lot of different work with transcode and FFmpeg and playing around with those, but I didn't need to. If I just restarted or hit cancel or restarted DVD RIP, it would have worked fine. I wouldn't have learned so much, but that was it.
Hey, the Google results actually refer to it as mashing the red X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mash the mash the link.
Sorry. That's the DVD rip.
That's this guy. Yeah, that's redneck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mash everything, but I don't mash my links. So I can sort of click.
Yeah, I press the mouse button.
That's funny.
Complimented. Mash the links.
Okay.
He mashed it.
That place?
Yeah, so this guy, he come out and he talked to, the other thing, he was playing with the new KDE with Ubuntu. And by the way, I learned a little difference between Kubuntu and Ubuntu. When you put in USB keys in GNOME,
yeah,
they automatically, you know how they'll automatically mount?
Yeah.
KDE doesn't do that. And we could show, but if I brought my stuff in, KDE won't. If you do fdisk minus L on slash /dev/dev/db, right, it won't show up anything. If you do F, yeah, so it won't show up anything.
On KDE.
Right, on KDE.
If this minus L won't show anything in KDE.
Right. It's kind of weird that way. Yeah. I mean, it was still there. I was able to mount, you know, mount slash dev SDB1 to disk once I made the directory, but it wouldn't show up, and it wouldn't show up under a df command either. So
that means it wouldn't mount.
No, I mean, it didn't mount and it didn't even show it up, so where you knew it was there, other than intuitively,
right,
to mount it.
Yeah, because I think I run Fluxbox, and I purposely didn't start the, I think it's the GNOME volume manager, so
uh-huh,
it mounts that stuff automatically for you, because I don't like that happening myself.
You don't like
it's the volume manager?
Yeah.
Dwayne,
it took me a second to figure that out, because I had volume on the brain. I was, because I'm using Fluxbox, I was trying to,
right,
to come up with some kind of panel output other than,
right,
K-Mixer, I think, to control the volume. I was thinking, is that it? But it wasn't. But yeah, that just controls the mounting of removable devices.
I think that's interesting too, because you could see why you wouldn't like that. But then if you got used to it happening and understanding, yeah, that it would happen, the only reason I like the and we went back in our old lugs, because we went through a bunch of remastering stuff and remastering with Nopix, and I've fallen back to Ubuntu only because I'm not so good at the remastering, and new drivers for my cell phone's modem has come up with a new version of Ubuntu, so I'm tolerating these things that happen that you're not used to, like what you're talking about, the automatic mounting.
Yes, I like Conker, and I don't like when I was sticking a USB drive having to safely remove it from two different places. I feel like that's what I happened to, because
right,
Conker wouldn't mount it, but GNOME would mount it.
So can't you just put no auto in your F style?
Yeah, you can, I think we can do that.
Will that do the same thing?
I think it might.
Mm-hmm. We can look and see.
A lot of times there'll be man pages for the actual
files. That's what I do in mine. I guess if you don't, if you have a bunch of keys.
Not with the autonomous process.
Well, that would mean that you have to have an entry.
You'd have to have an entry for everything.
Yeah. So if you don't want to do that, you can get the volume in or turn it off or whatever.
Or it's not running the volume in or whatever. That's what I
think. How do you keep it from knowing from running the volume in?
Well, I don't want to know. I run plug box.
Okay. Right. Another thing.
When you stop a service, you know, I do the update RC.
That's right. Okay.
Minus F.
Another thing I don't like about that is if you put two or three drives in, especially if they're partitioned different ways, right, then you're all the way up to disk-7.
Yeah.
You know, in the drives that they're in the directories that they make.
Right.
All right. Did you do a new tab on this?
No. I just clicked the link.
Mashed it.
You mashed it.
And this is you again, Tom.
Oh, it is?
Tom, you've been busy.
Oh, well, shit. okay, well, this feeds into yesterday, or not yesterday, last 2 weeks ago. after we decided that the step was wrong, and you could look at the procedure, and maybe we should just look at that procedure real quick.
This is a USB drive we
have? Right. Okay. And we decided that the procedure was out of order. I was late for poker because I decided I had to try this because I spent so much time trying to make it work, and it didn't work.
It
and
sounds like you have been doing quality. Yeah. Changing the procedure.
Oh.
Did I even have it in here?
No. The procedure link. It has a procedure. The one in the last.
What was the procedure? Because I wouldn't hear.
That was
Can you give me a brief?
Pen Linux. Pen Linux Kubuntu.
What's Pen Linux?
Pen Drive Linux, I think.
Yeah, Pen Drive Linux.
What's that for?
Was it here?
No, it was the. I put that the link in the slide that we were on.
Yeah, boot up.
Oh.
Into Linux. Pen Drive Linux.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, mash procedure.
Oh, I'm
mash
sorry.
Mash procedure.
Man. I'm sorry. Thanks.
Or you could press it.
You have to just smack me on the side of the head in the direction you want me to go.
Tom, what was it? Was it Casper we were trying to figure
out? Yeah, well, I said, oh, what's wrong with this?
I can't find that page. Can we just go to the main site? And,
yeah, you can just go to the main site. It should still be on the front page.
It's going to a space. I don't know if it was the space. That...
All right, so scroll down to Kubuntu Persistent. See that? Right there. You must be one down. Right. One down there. Mash that one.
Mash it. Come on, turn
the right
one.
All right, there's the procedure. And remember what we decided? If you scroll down further, and we decided that step 14, right there, see where you do the syslinux command?
Yeah.
When you do number 12, right, it mounts the drive.
Right.
Because you're in Ubuntu or some Linux that's mounting it.
Right.
So you put the USB in and then it mounts it. It doesn't have you unmount it before you run syslinux. And so what we decided last week was that syslinux running on the mounted drive would make this step not work.
Or so you need possibility.
Well, all right, that's what we decided was a possibility.
So you need to unmount.
So I did that and it didn't work.
It didn't work.
And I was crushed. So now you can go back to
slide.
Yeah, the slide. And then, that's a
back mash.
Dwayne told me so that you fixed it. So, but anyway, another Google search shows a Windows fix procedure. So there's, if you wanted to do this in Windows, you could get the thing to work. But I refuse. I won't use the Windows procedure.
That's right.
So, but there it is. If you wanted to make it work with Windows, you could.
Oh, delete the file name from the root directory. That way it's an RDXE. L tree, C colon backslash.
Try that on our clients. So okay, that was, I just included that, and so that's how I ended it up. And then I ended up saying, if you figure this out, let me know, or Dwayne. And then, so Dwayne said, Ryan figured it out.
Yeah, I need to write it up. It was a bit lengthy, believe it or not. For me, there were, the easy fix, I'll tell you, is there's a thing with, like, SysLinux used to be, and don't quote me on this, but this is kind of just like after the reading of it, where SysLinux used to write to the master boot record, all was fine and dandy. Something changed that to support something to where now it didn't really do that. It really just wrote to a specific block on that, you know, like one of the first blocks in the partition, and it wrote a SysLinux dot whatever file, and then you also had to have a SysLinux.cfg that it used. But it never actually made the, it never actually touches the master boot record, so it doesn't actually make the drive bootable. So I found another guy who, in his thing, he was having problems with it, and he said he could never get it to work using just SysLinux because it was never touching the master boot record. And that the easy fix for him was he installed Lilo and used Lilo to prepare the master boot record for boot.
Oh. So,
yay. That was one aspect of the issues I had with it. So once I did that, boom, it tried to boot instantly. I got the menu to come up, the kind of the Ubuntu menu. There were two other problems I had. One was the initrd that we downloaded off that site.
Yep.
I had downloaded the KDE 4 remix, or whatever they called it, the Ubuntu KDE 4 something. There's Ubuntu 804, and then there's another one where they have put KDE 4 in it and released it about the same time. Well, the initrd is for off of pin drive Linux, is for just the regular 804 with KDE, whatever version was made without KDE 4. And I was mixed matching versions, so that was a problem I had. But in doing some reading, I figured out what they were doing to recreate the initrd to make it be persistent. And so that's what I need to write up, because it was a little bit lengthy. But
oh, okay.
With those instructions, you should be able to, at least with any of the, anything that's similar to Ubuntu, you should be able to make a persistent bootable USB drive out of it, because they're just making a few changes to some init scripts. And I actually changed, like they had in the instructions, if you'll remember, they had two partitions on the drive. One was for the system stuff that you dump the ISO onto, and the other one was supposed to hold like system persistence, so if you change settings or whatever.
Right.
Well, I mean, you can actually have more persistent folders than that if you want, so if you wanted to, you could actually probably add, I didn't do this, but you can probably add users, update software, and do everything you want.
Right.
With the extra space. And I didn't use the same names they did, and so I learned where in the init scripts things had to be changed so that they knew how to, so the initrd knew how to mount the other partitions to use for persistence and that kind of thing. So I'll write that up. I'll send Dwayne a link to it so he can post it in the slides. But it's kind of lengthy as far as the stuff that was involved. I mean, you could do it in 5 minutes, but like I wanted to know why. You know, what did this really change, and why is this an issue? And so it actually took a little bit of reading to do. But I got to work. I did it with Ubuntu 8, regular Ubuntu, just played with it. So I've done it for several, and I've actually got a little USB drive now with a persistent Ubuntu 8.04.
Will it save packages? Like if you updated it?
Yeah, you know, I haven't done it, but I actually did the, hey, check for latest, check for newer packages, and it found them. It says that I should do an update. I didn't do it because at the time I was like, well, I don't have to redo this if it breaks something. So I didn't try it. But that's the next thing on the list, is just boot it up, let it do an update, and see if, hey, you know, everything's updated. Because that would be really cool. Because, you know, these 2 gig thumb drives are cheap.
Yeah,
actually, there's an 8 gig. For $30 on this today.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the 2 gig ones for like a 4 pack for, you know, $50.
So,
as far as reading and writing to it a lot and wearing it out, who cares? They're cheap now, you know. So you could, you know, you probably wouldn't wear one out in the time the next distribution came out that you wanted to use. So you could toss that one, you know,
right.
Get whatever you know, preference files, you know, over to your new one, and just toss the key. So.
So I looked at the VirtualBox install procedure, thinking like if you could do this and but you have to reboot to make the install work for VirtualBox in Ubuntu. There's a reboot step. So the reason I wanted to know that was if I could save a VM on the 8 gig drive and I couldn't get the persistent to work with the script, if I could get VirtualBox to load, then I could have a VM saved and it would work. But since you have to have the reboot without the persistent feature, forget it.
Can't do it right on. I did the other day, just to see if it would work. I was kind of skeptical that it would, but I took a USB regular hard drive, and I took the internal hard drive out of that laptop I had, and I installed a Bluetooth on that USB drive while it was plugged in.
Uh-huh.
And it came back up fine, no problem. I took the USB drive, plugged it into another machine. It's the same hardware. It worked fine.
So you did an install?
A regular install, right?
Well, why didn't that work in a key? Because I tried that in a key.
I don't know.
Spirits.
I was skeptical that.
I had to mention the spirits on this thing. And that goes back to those links, no matter what. Try and do to discount the spirits.
Anyway, it worked for me, so.
I'm not sure I had too many spirits.
Well, that's true. It's a party, not a regular love.
Alright. Okay, so this thing is using Image Magic to make like stencils for painting on things.
Oh,
and
that's
so
great.
So basically, let's see what else is here. This page right here, this guy tells you a lot of information about getting. Basically, you're gonna want some text and some image, possibly an image on an image you create. With this Image Magic, we use the Convert program, or that's what I'm using. I'm sure you probably use other things. But he goes through and tells you how to put simple labels and then change the fonts and put this, you know, all these different colors. But if we're going to do a stencil, we probably want something pretty simple. But I mean, this is a pretty long page. You see the scroll bar is still way up there, so he's got tons of how to do all kinds of things. But anyway, the link is there. So if you want to look for some reference, I mean, that's straight off the Image Magic website or /usage. But it's just a good, there's so much under there, I just figured I'd put a link to that one page. It is good for doing this. The other thing is, once you start doing it, you're probably going to want some fonts. This web page, publicity page, has a bunch of them, 1,001 fonts, has a bunch of them. And if you want to see, I bet I don't even have Image Magic installed on this thing. Do that real quick. Magic, and it's with a CK. I'm not supposed to. Oh, my gosh. The old screen is popping up. I think it's
Oh,
yeah, I just installed this one yesterday, so let's let it chug for a minute. It won't probably take that long. So if you want to see which fonts are already available, you can do this. This is the command we're using. It's part of the Image Magic package. And you can say minus list type. Now, I read, because I think this page says minus list font, but that is for a certain newer version of Image Magic. So
if type doesn't work, try font.
Doesn't work, tough tie. One of them won't work, should it? But it'll list the ones that are available already, and then you can add more. And there's documentation on where to put them and that kind of thing. I'm not sure. I never added any myself. 64%. Okay, so we'll just keep talking. The first thing I was going to do is make a simple one, just something in the middle of the page. So I do convert, give it a canvas size, 320 by 240. And now this thing is,
I really want to talk to you.
That's your mom.
Some booty call.
Can I bring you back a little bit?
Yes, mom.
Mom, okay, I'll call you back. I'll look at you, mom.
Okay, so you give it the size of your image. This right here, it took me a while, and the best thing I can find is just from examples. I couldn't find it in the man page, but this is like some key thing to say. This is a blank canvas, basically, and you can give it a color, you know, like not even able to give it a hex or something like that for color. But I don't know. Anyway, you can get by with this, because if we're doing stencils, pretty much you want white, black, that kind of thing. You're gonna be cutting it out. You can give it the font. You can give it the point size here, which is the font size and points. And then I give it this minus draw, and I start giving it this string from there to there of things I wanted to do. So I wanted to put text at the X 20, Y 140, so over 20, down 140. I wanted to write the word hello stencil, and I have that in single quotes. And then this is my output file test I give. And so what that gives you is this thing. It's just a little thumbnail. Because it's on a white background. It's just, the image is really only right here, but it's on a white background, so it just blends in with the rest.
Control A. Control A?
Yeah.
There
you go.
There you go.
That puts that up there for us. I just explained what those are. Okay, so that was a simple example. And so now, we'll put a little bit of something different. So I say, give it 1,000 by 250, white background, that font, and I'm making it bold, so you get a chunkier letter. Point size, 155. I say draw, and the first thing I do is draw an image. I'm going to say draw it over everything on there. So like if you had text already there, this thing would be over the top of the text, or you can put it under or whatever. So say draw the image, and I have four numbers for it. 770 is over X coordinates. So you see it's 1,000 wide. I put it over 770 pixels. Zero is at the top. And I tell it to be 200 by 250. So it'll stretch and kind of skew the image to fit what you want. And then there's the image there, tuckstencil.png. And then I just start right in with the next command, text 10175 pcload.info. And then give it the output name, pcload.info.gif. And so it just jams out there. So you can see, you could actually make a web service or something that generated an image. You know, for you.
On the fly.
Uh-huh. So that puts this thing out. Yeah, that's the full size of that image.
So is this the
part of that text? Is
no, actually the image has the little.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, the image is actually screwed up. I just got it off of Google Images.
So is this the answer to your riddle?
No, not quite. It is. I mean, there's not much of a.
This is cool.
Okay, so this one. So I wanted to show you that you can rotate text with it. So this one, let's say 800 by 200. Point size, 175, draw. And so now the first thing I do is I draw the image. I should touch it off the full screen, that's all my problem. So I draw the image over 600 over, 10 down, 175 by 200, you see it there. And the tuck's original. And then I say rotate, and it's almost like you have this drawing mechanism. And so it's like you can imagine, I just rotated my drawing thing 180 degrees. And now I'm going to put text down. And I'm going to say, and it gets really screwy. You're going to play around with the coordinates. And I may be doing something wrong, but this is the only way I can get it to work. So you start doing backwards coordinates and all. And it is really jacked up. I mean, this works, but you got to play around with it. You're going to find yourself doing minus 40, minus 20, minus 30, or you know, plus 10, and it'll be all over the place. But you can play around with it until you start figuring it out. So I rotate it 180 degrees, so that makes that upside down. So I put the log upside down. And now I left it at 180 degrees out. So I had to rotate it 180 degrees back, and then put the text, life, and put it out the log, life, back in. And so you end up with that. So you can do all kind of crazy stuff with it. I mean, there's just so much stuff you can do with any magic. It's ridiculous. All from the command line. And maybe not everybody wants to draw stuff on a command line, but it can be useful sometimes if you had a script where you wanted to change this banner all the time or something like that. So that was pretty much that.
It'd be an easy way to make an animated gift too.
Image Magic does all animation and stuff like that too. So what I did is I printed it out on, I just have it in this folder because it would stay. So I printed it out on paper first. And
cool.
Like that. And then you kind of want to print one out on paper and figure out, because you know, it's kind of tricky to figure out what you're going to cut out, because you can't cut out everything and there's got to be something left for the stencil. So I'd say print it out on paper first and kind of figure out what you're doing. And then I took and printed it out on a transparency and then cut that one out. And then you can, it depends on if you want to reuse it. If you're going to make a lot of them, you want a transparency because then the paint will soak into it. If you're going to do one, you can actually print it out like this. And you can spray glue the back of it and stick it on whatever, and then it'll hold all those little pieces down so you get the real sharp edges and stuff. And the shirt is right over there.
I was going to say, can I buy a shirt?
Yeah. So I did. Mine looks really crappy because that's the first time I've ever done it, but I did it with this thing, and I didn't even hold it down. All I did was just lay this thing on the t-shirt and spray paint on even with a brush. So you can spray it, it'd be better and all that stuff.
So now Tom can open a t-shirt shop and make his own cool t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go. So I have these. Oh, I bought this, this little...
That's awesome.
That's
the one.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
We should
get tats.
Yeah. So this is a t-shirt paint, fabric paint, and it just says to wash the shirts first. Put cardboard between the, like, if you're gonna paint the front side, stick some cardboard between it so it doesn't soak through into the other side of the shirt. Apply 1 to 2 coats. Dry flat for 4 hours, and then after 4 hours you hold a iron about a half inch above it, and it says until paint appears textured, avoid over steaming, and then it says it can be washed after 72 hours, and it should last for quite a few washes. The girl that I bought this at that Joanne Fabrics thing, and the girl there told me that her kids did it and that she's washed it 25 times and it's still in there. So
did you run that transparency through your inkjet, or?
Yeah, I did it upstairs. Really? The NMCI printer printed that.
Are you serious?
Yep. Yeah. And they have a whole pack of transparencies up there. Actually, they have a whole big old keg of packs of transparencies in there.
Well, would you use a penknife or a little X-Acto?
X-Acto knife, yeah.
That you get at Walmart for a couple bucks or whatever.
That is awesome.
So, and I, you know, you can do, they have this stuff in spray, they have foam, actually they say the foam is best. I did a brush, which probably the foam would work a lot better. But anyway, so.
That's cool.
I have, this is another transparency. If anybody wants to cut that out, there's some printouts. Also, this image here is that exact image from the slide before the previous slide.
You should do one just like that, man.
All the way around. Yeah, you should do one.
Well, it's there, man. You can do it.
No, that would be.
It's there. You don't have to do it.
That would be pretty cool.
Let's see.
Here you go. You want to check that out?
Yeah. This image is the actual image I printed out. I mean, that is that one.
That's awesome.
So, if you want to do one, you can just take that image and print it out.
That's cool.
So actually I got t-shirts. They didn't have all black, so I got extra large and large t-shirts.
Oh,
I
got
t-shirts. Y'all can do
serious?
Yeah, I got paint if you want to take some paint home, and so you can make your own. Let's see, I don't know which one.
We should have a t-shirt party. Just make shirts.
That's what this is.
Make our shirts. Just make
these are extra large and these are large.
Okay.
So yep. Grab one if y'all want. If y'all want to do it now, you want to do it later. If you want to cut out this, if you want to take that home or whatever. I only got 3 things of paint. They're only a couple bucks a piece, or like $1.50 a piece. So you're welcome to do them. I got stuff for You just want to take one home and take a stencil. Or, you know, somebody can take this stencil. Or if you, you know, I don't know about spray gluing this on a t-shirt. You probably wouldn't ever get the spray glue off, but they do. Some people use double stick tape and all. I tried to make it.
Just have glue. Yeah, of course. That's all right.
The little stuff in the tubs kind of looks like how much of my brain. And if you look at that shirt very close, it's pretty ugly. But far away, it's not too bad. So, yeah, I'll have the t-shirt and make you a PC level t-shirt. But I think that's all I had pretty much.
Well, that's really not too bad. But touching it too, it got good texture to it. You can really wash this. I mean, that's not, you can't pull that out. That's pretty good.
If you did stick it down, but like I said, the outside of the line.
I think you'll see us walking into a tattoo parlor. Yeah. I designed this with
him. You can probably take rows of double stick tape all over this and tape it on the back of the stencil before you cut it out. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. You guys hear that?
What's that?
Mark was Tony was talking about a stencil that was sticky, and I was thinking you could probably get double stick tape there before you even cut it out. Just put rows of double stick tape on there and then cut it out. And then it would make that stencil sticky, so you wouldn't have to stick it down to it.
On that stuff,
but that's the only way you, that would be the only way you get a good line.
She's doing in the drawings and stuff, she's doing a lot of drawings, and she's not that. So they do those drawings, and they have to cut their stuff for size and everything. So she needs some stuff.
Another thing is, like, as you can see, the letters that have a disconnected piece in the middle. I saved them out, but I knew it was going to look like crap anyway. For a time.
I was wondering why you did it.
But you could stick them in there if you wanted to. It suggests that on all the websites I've read.
But you stick it actually, just back in the hole.
Yeah, you can put some double stick tape on it and stick it back on there.
You said you use spray.
My whole body.
No,
I use that.
That's very cool.
It is cool.
I wanted to do t-shirts for us and just never did, so I figured. And I wanted to do t-shirts on my own. You know,
We got
load
shirts.
They're
like, man, that's a game. That's a game, man.
I just pulled over.
You know what I'm saying? They already get on those bikers anyway. They don't stop us for anything.
Isn't Hell Fatigue a Windows font?
It could be.
That's the European way they say it.
Probably the correct way. I'm probably idiot.
I think it came with Debian though.
Huh?
Yeah, it is a Debian.
It may be like a common name or something. I don't know. But yeah, I've seen that in Windows before too. But they wouldn't have. I don't think they would have packaged it. But I'm sure they wouldn't have been in
there. Restricted.
Woo! Yeah, they do got kicked to it.
Yeah,
they do.
That'd be cool.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.